listeners, there's been some milestone making, Giants trading, Yankees aching, woo, willing and dealing going down in the sports world, and it's going to be a hard time keeping Mad Mike and me from giving our opinions on these dealings. Woo, let's get the show started.
Listen, when Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike grab mics, it's real sports, real talk, on the field or on the court. If it happened in New York, it's covered like a blanket, dog. Interviews are ill, simply up close and personal. Batter up, Lloyd's batting first, set the tone. Mike's either at the stadium or the garden on the phone. Here we go, Giants and Jets, Yankees and Mets, Knicks and Nets. This is only an intro, the show is next.
A-O-B! And please, pardon my fresh, as we bring you an all-new episode of the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Listeners, today is Monday, March 11th, 2019, and this show airs on Mondays from 1 p.m. to 2 p.m. on TuneIn, Pocket Cast, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher. We are rolling big, baby. And if you got any questions that you'd like for me and Mad Mike to answer, you can always shoot them through email to lloyd@parkmyfresh.com, or you can send them directly to the website. Be sure to hit that subscribe button, listeners, so you won't miss a damn thing. And you can also catch previous tapings of the show, listeners. And if you're big on social media, me and Mad Mike are up on there also. Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, Twitter. Lloyd A. Thompson, one word, Instagram. L-L-O-Y-D, and we are also on Facebook, Lloyd A. Thompson. We have a great show for you today, as always, listeners. We're going to talk about the whole Landon Collins deal as the Giants let him walk. We're going to talk about this Antonio Brown trade as he was sent to the Oakland Raiders. We're going to talk some baseball. LeBron James has passed Michael Jordan as the fourth highest scorer in NBA history. Does that mean that he's better than Michael Jordan? We're going to touch up on that, and we're going to talk some hockey as promised, listeners. So as always, let's buckle up. Sit back and relax and start spreading the news. Hey, yo, let's get it.
How sweet it is. It's Monday. That means the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Show is back. Let's go.
As always, we got to find out where the Mad Mike is and where he's calling from. Yo, Mad Mike, where you at today, baby?
What's going on, Lloyd? I'm over in Kansas City, man. I had to visit the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. You know, they got an exhibit specifically for the female Negro Leaguers. You know, I didn't even know that females played baseball professionally until, this week.
You know what? I mean, that movie, League of Their Own, that Tom Hanks did, I mean, I believe it was based on a true story. But it was something that most people probably don't know about. Most people never followed up on. So that is a lot of history right there, Mad Mike. Good stuff.
Yeah, no, I mean specifically, you know, women such as Effa Manley, Minnie Forbes, Olivia Taylor. You know what I mean? Like just you know, in the African American community. I this is just strictly Negro League Hall of Fame. They people don't realize how important women were to the sport. But like you mentioned, yeah, you know, especially during the war, it's amazing to me how overlooked it gets.
You know, that's a place that everybody should go visit. Even if you're not African-American, you should go visit and check it out. It's just history. All right, Mad Mike, but let's move on, Mad Mike. As the New York Giants let one of their best players walk Tuesday, and it was curious if not bewildering decision that they declined using a franchise tag on safety Landon Collins, whether or not Landon Collins told the Giants he didn't want them to use the franchise tag on him, the fact that they didn't use it is baffling to me. Now, they allowed, Mad Mike, a 25-year-old defensive playmaker to hit the free agent market after he led his team in tackles in each of his four professional seasons, making a Pro Bowl in three of those four seasons. And he was also a first-team All-Pro safety in 2016 and a team captain this past year. You let a team captain walk? And it makes this decision that much more curious, and I believe that this sets a dangerous precedent for general manager Dave Gettleman, Matt Mike. Now, hear me out. Here we have Collins. He's selected with the first pick of the second round in the 2015 NFL draft, all right? He played at a high level doing everything asked of him. And at no point did the Giants try to seriously negotiate a long-term deal with him. Instead, they simply let him walk with the hope of maybe getting a third-round compensatory pick in this draft for him. Next year's draft. Now, it makes all the more strange why they declined Collins last year, trade deadline. The Green Bay Packers traded for safety high Clinton Dix for a fourth round at the time. And Collins, according to one Pro Bowl personnel evaluator that I was looking up at, Matt Mike, is a significantly better player. Significantly better. And what Gettleman did with this move is send a message to the locker room, in my opinion, and that message is play well, play hurt, do everything we ask, and you still might not get paid when your time comes. It's a risky way to operate. You know, even if Collins isn't a perfect fit in James Betcher's scheme, let's face it, he does have coverage deficiencies, man, Mike. He can't cover to save his life. And maybe that's the reason why the Giants let him walk, because now we're in a day and age, man, Mike, where you have a lot of hybrid tight ends. And what I mean by hybrid tight ends, listeners, if you have tight ends that you can line up in a slot and line up at the end of the line, and these guys are like having an extra receiver on the line. And that's one thing me and Mad Mike would definitely agree. And if you're a football fan and you're a Giants fan, you'll agree that that was Collins' biggest deficiency is he couldn't cover.
Excellent tackler. Well, you know, here's the thing, though. It's easy to say Landon Collins couldn't cover. Here's the thing, though, man. Landon Collins is not a free safety in the mold of Ed Reed. Yeah, so that's why I don't respect the Giants here, because it's kind of misleading to put that information out there. One, safeties. When do safeties have to cover? First off, your first line of defense was training for Alec Ogletree, who was supposed to improve the coverage on the tight end. Alex Ogletree himself, couldn't do it. So then you're asking Landon Collins to solely play free safety. He's not a free safety. He is that hybrid type that can cover when necessary, but he's going to be in a box. He's like a Jamal Adams type. That's what the SEC is producing. So if you ask me, Dave Gettleman's trade for Alec Ogletree is why Landon Collins is not a Giant anymore. Alec Ogletree stinks in coverage, and what no one else is talking about is the fact that he had $11 million for this year that the Giants couldn't get rid of. It wasn't when they traded for him. They traded for Alec Ogletree on a two-year deal. They can't get out of him until after next season. So that's where I think it's a little misleading. You know, like I know, the linebacker plays just as much a role in that coverage, that coverage of I don't know if you want to say the slot or the tight end, just as much as Landon Collins. If not, he was asked to do so more. So Alec Ogletree didn't look like such a bad acquisition.
Well, here's the key, man, Mike. Do you think Landon Collins goes somewhere? Obviously, somebody's going to trade him. But do you think, not trade for him, somebody's going to sign him. Do you think he signs somewhere and becomes the highest paid safety in the NFL? Do you think somebody would be willing to give him that money?
No, but I'll tell you one thing. There's one team that God help me for saying it, but one team that I looked at that makes so much sense to me would be Alabama, would be Miami, with Minka Fitzpatrick back there. They know each other. They're familiar. They came from the same defensive system. It's kind of like what New Orleans did what the Saints did, picking up, what's the guy's name? The cancer? Help me out. Who's Giants traded him over there.
Eli Apple,
right? Because they had all these other former Ohio State defensive backs, and they were all familiar with each other, and he went over there, and I'm not going to say he played lights out, but he probably showed better last year for the Saints than at any point he did as a Giant. So I can see Miami being a fit for him. I don't think he's going to be the top paid, but I'll tell you one thing. He automatically, to me, jumps Earl Thomas just on age. Now, two Pro Bowls.
Yeah, not only that, man, Mike, he's a popular player. And he was respected and worldwide. And don't think for one second that his teammates aren't paying attention to this. I believe that the rest of that locker room is watching intently, and it might not be so easy to get them to go the extra mile for the organization after what just transpired and them trading them away. And Sterling Shepard could be in a similar situation next year as a productive second rounder when his contract is due to expire. And all of this is especially relevant with Gettleman in charge. It makes you wonder whether or not he learned from his first stint in general manager in Carolina when he shockingly pulled the franchise tag for under Josh Norman and rubbed some of those team leaders the wrong way.
You know, it's funny, Lord, not to cut you off, but I did want to go there, right? Because you're talking about a guy, Dave Gettleman, who says that he doesn't believe in big money, big time safeties, right? That's just not a belief of his. But he's lying to you because he drafted Shaq Thompson in the first round in Carolina. And Shaq Thompson never became anything special in Carolina. As a matter of fact, I think that he's kind of moved into the linebacker role because he wasn't so good at safety. You already touched on the Josh Norman situation where he you know, flagged him and then he pulls the flag and they lose him. You don't even mention the fact that one of the reasons that he lost his job was it wasn't the release of Steve Smith for nothing. I mean, people didn't agree with him. They didn't like it. But he sold you on Steve Smith is bad for the young quarterback, right? But then he went and he treated Greg Olsen and Thomas Davis the same exact way. He doesn't understand that leaders matter in a locker room. How can you get guys to buy in when you're basically shuffling their leaders out the door? I mean, Landon Collins was one of the only guys keeping that locker room together when Eli Apple had his meltdown. Janoris Jenkins had his meltdown. DRC had his meltdown. We can go down the line. I don't know what he's learned.
I mean, and look, his way of getting out of it, man, Mike, is he's saying that, you know, Gettleman is on record saying he would not have been happy with the franchise tag. And, he didn't want him to be an unwanted distraction. Like, come on, man.
I mean, not for nothing, but isn't Eli Manning an unwanted distraction?
Right, exactly.
Wouldn't they take out the Super Bowl?
Look, they kept Eli Manning, and he takes a super salary cap hit.
And not for nothing, that can't be missed on everything here, right? Because why isn't Eli Manning saying, hey, let's restructure so I can free up some money so you can keep Landon?
Well, yeah.
This is the team leader, right? This is the best quarterback New York has ever seen, right? I'm just saying. And I know for all the Giant haters that are like, or Giant fans that are like, just hating, we don't know if they approached Eli yet. Why wouldn't they?
And then on top of that, man, Mike, the Giants traded linebacker Olivier Vernon to the Browns in exchange for offensive guard Kevin Zeitler on Friday. And New York ultimately clears $1.5 million of cap space in the trade. And Zeitler, he's entering his third year of a five-year, $60 million deal. He carries a cap hit of $10 million this season and in 2020 and $12 million in 2021. And Vernon, meanwhile, he's entering the fourth year of a five-year, $85 million deal. And the Giants are responsible for $8 million in debt money, even though Vernon carries a cap hit of $19.5 million in 2019 and 2020. And Cleveland is on a hook for $15.25 million of Vernon's salary. And the Giants, they also dealt a fourth-round pick, the 132nd overall pick, and received Cleveland's fifth-rounder, the 155th overall pick. Now, Vernon, 28. He earned his first Pro Bowl spot last season. He has 7 sacks and 30 combined tackles, 1 forced fumble, and a career low 11 games from New York. Now, we both agreed we don't know how the hell he went to the Pro Bowl. We don't know how he went. And Zeitler, he's 29, and he was Pro Bowl's focused 6th-ranked offensive guard last season, and he's appeared in 16 games in each of the past 4 seasons. Now, we was just saying, Mad Mike, that why, if you traded Vernon, this trade makes no sense. And just hear this out, because Mad Mike brought up a great point, listeners, and I'll let him break it down for you or continue the torch. Why would you not sign Landon Collins and then turn around and trade Olivier Vernon? Why wouldn't it make sense just to let Vernon go make this trade and then you have that money to sign Landon Collins? This is a head scratcher. Gannon, give your thoughts on that, man, Mike, because we was discussing this.
Well, my issue with the trade was look, I understand that this is a sixth rated guard in all of football. He's also paid the third highest paid guard in all of football. So knowing that, here's what I'm going to say to you. The reason I didn't like the move was because the Giants need, they absolutely need to start looking for Eli's successor. You understand that? No one is taking that into consideration. So like we said, with this sixth pick, what they've guaranteed themselves is that they got to get something defensively, right? Regardless of what it is, they got to figure it out. Because you got to remember something, Janoris Jenkins, after this season coming up, he's going to be gone. So then you have no cornerbacks, right? You already have no pass rush with Olivier gone. You have no safeties. I don't understand how this kid made Pro Bowl safety for the Giants. I didn't think he did anything special. And I think that now that you want to make him the number one, you're going to see that. He's going to be exposed. Now to take it to the financial, right? You have the highest paid tackle in football and Solder. You have the third highest paid guard in all of football and Zeitler. You have the highest paid wide receiver in all of football. You have the fifth highest paid running back in all of football. You have a $23 million quarterback. I mean, realistically, you spent way too much money on the offensive line, on the offense as a whole. You have $25 million and you have nothing to talk about on defense. Snacks is gone. That's why I didn't understand this. For all the people that are like, well, they were going to have to find offensive guard help. Well, look at TJ Lang just got released on Friday. You telling me that you don't think Zeitler is 29 years old. You don't think that you could have got TJ Lang at 31 years old for like $8 or $7 million and keep Olivier Vernon? Or at least try to get a draft? That's my issue. My thing is, yeah, well, we fixed the hole at guard. Yeah, but you could have signed somebody to play guard at a much cheaper price than now you're going to have. If you go into that Justin Houston, right? Justin Houston got cut by Kansas City. How much you think Justin Houston is going to cost you on defense? Even at a bargain deal, you're going to get him at $10, $11 million a year, which is more than you would have paid a guard of TJ Lang or Roger Saffold's asking price. That's the problem I have with it. Yeah, well, they got a top five guard. Yeah, they did. But they're paying a top five guard top five money. That's the thing about football. You got to find ways to get top five guys at top 15 money.
Look, this team has a lot of holes, Matt Mike. A lot of holes. And they're not sitting on a pile of money. They have about $25 million in cap space after this latest move.
Yeah.
So unlike the MetLife Stave counterpart in the Jets, they will need to be cautious on how they spend on free agency. And they have to save money for their draft picks too. So, still there's some bargain players out there on the market. You have Anthony Barr.
Nah, that's not a bargain player, buddy.
You have Darrell Williams, Preston Smith. We'll see what happens.
Preston Smith's not a bargain player either. Trey Fowler. That's what I'm trying to tell you. Preston Smith is going to get himself $8, $9 million. He just is. He's on the second tier of pass rushers. And that's what a second-tier pass rusher is getting, $10 million. A top-tier pass rusher is getting about $15 to $17 million. So when you look at it, if you go and get Preston Smith, you're only working with $15 million. You still got to go get another cornerback, right? You go get a Kevin Brown, who just got released from Houston because he was set to make $9.5 million. What's he going to get, $7.5 million? So you get Preston Smith and Kevin Brown, and now you have $8 million, which is what you need for your draft because you're picking in the top, six or so in every round? So you need to account for that money, too. A top six player is making, I think he's cutting a deal of, 4 years, $28 million. So, I mean, those are things to think about. It's just poor management, man, poor execution. And I just don't understand it. I don't see. You got me, boy. You got me. You know what I mean? Like, I'm stumped.
Well, Mal, we was talking that the Jets made a trade as well. You want to break that down for the listeners, man, Mike?
Well, the Jets traded a fifth round pick to the Oakland Raiders for Kalichio Semele and a sixth round pick. And if you ask me, it's a great trade. We were just talking about how Zeitler is ranked in the top five guards. Just a year ago, he's available because he had such an awful year because of injury and concussions. He dropped 40 pounds. He dropped from 330 to about 295 pounds in the offseason. And, he was made available. Once upon a time, he was the top-rated guard on the top-rated offensive line in football just 2 years ago. So the Jets are banking that it was just a one-year, aberration, and he'll bounce back. It's actually a good trade. He makes slightly less money a year, I believe, $9.7 million. That just goes to show you where he ranks in the guard in guard value across the league. And, he's a two-time Pro Bowler in 16 and 17 prior to this, this past season. So, we'll see. It's a good move for the Jets. It's a good starting point. If you ask me, they got to make sure now that they land Matt Paradis from Denver to play center and finish it off. You know what I mean? Like, this isn't going to mean anything if they can't finish it off.
All right, so now also Antonio Brown has been traded. Like, that saga's apparently reached a conclusion. And just days after the trade with the Bills collapsed, the Steelers reached a deal and agreement to send Antonio Brown to the Raiders, and that'll include a pay raise for the star receiver. Do you like this deal by the Raiders, man, Mike? Trading for Antonio Brown? And the Raiders, I'm sorry, before I let you comment, the Raiders are giving the Steelers a third and fifth round pick in this year's draft, so that means the Steelers will receive picks number 66 and 142 from the Raiders.
I don't know what Oakland's doing, man. How do you trade Amari Cooper and then trade for another, like, 30? How do you trade him and then trade for a 31-year-old wide receiver? Yeah, I know, no doubt. Antonio Brown is top notch. He's going to be the best receiver in the league for another 2 or 3 years. But that's not the direction that you were looking to go when you started, piecing off your team. Like I said, they just traded Osemele to the Jets. And it just doesn't make sense to me. You trade him to the Jets, but you're trading on the same day you're trading for Antonio Brown, and you're giving him a new, 3 years, $50 million contract, I think it was.
Yeah,
I don't know, man.
And then they also, let's not forget, they got rid of Khalil Mack.
Yeah. No, that's what I'm saying. None of it makes sense. It doesn't make... I'm not going to fault them for Khalil Mack. And the only reason, I'm not going to be a hypocrite here. If you're the Oakland Raiders and you're looking at this year's draft and you're saying, remember at one point, the Oakland Raiders were a lock to pick number one overall. And then they won a couple meaningless games and cost themselves, I guess they fell all the way to four, right? So if you were looking at it from that point of view, it seems smart. Like, get these first-round picks. Instead of paying Khalil Mack $150 million, you draft Nicky Bosa. You know what I mean? You draft Nicky Bosa, and then you have all that Khalil Mack money going somewhere else. It just didn't work out for them because they won too many games. But I don't know, man. And for Pittsburgh, shame on Pittsburgh. And the reason I say that is, shame that you let this get out of hand. Shame that there's now a perception, even though there was always a perception. Now there's really some proof behind it about how you treat Ben Roethlisberger versus everybody else. And you absolutely get nothing. Your window, to me, their window closed. Antonio Brown and Lev Bell both leave, and you get nothing for them. 2 years ago, you could have got first-round picks for both of them, and you walked away with a third and a fifth-round pick for the both of them. You're a loser. You're an ultimate loser, and all because your 37, 38-year-old quarterback doesn't want to practice, wants to publicly shame and blame players. It's just bad luck, man.
And also throwing the fact that they also don't know Le'Veon Bell either. He is gone.
No, that's what I'm saying.
They got nothing for him either.
Yeah, when you look at Brown and Bell, you lost two players of that caliber, and you can say that you only got the third and fifth round picks in a Brown trade. That's all you got for them. Nothing else. So is their GM, like, how do we look at their GM?
Yeah, look, Brown is coming off of yet another stellar season at the age of 30. He caught 104 passes for over 1,200 yards. And a league high 15, you know, touchdown catches. So while he's, you know, relied on his speed and out-of-the-world athleticism to become arguably the league's best receiver, he's a good enough route runner to remain productive at his age. And he's that skilled. So it's not difficult to imagine him aging gracefully when the Raiders are in Las Vegas. But like you said, you traded away Cooper, and then you signed Brown. You don't give Mac the money, but then you gave Antonio Brown the money he desires. And at the end of the day, you have to look at this team and say, is this team that much better with the move that was made? And I don't know if I necessarily can say that they are, Mad Mike, even though they get one of the league's best receivers, you know, one of the league's best receivers.
I mean, I don't know. We don't know what Derek Carr is. Derek Carr is, he looks like a deer in headlights at times. He looks like he's playing scared to get hurt. You know, I don't know. I don't know what he is. I've never been a big fan, but I guess that they're going to find out. You know, if you can't do it with Antonio Brown, then you can't do it. But I don't know, man. I don't know what they're thinking because, like, Tua was supposed to – they were looking at quarterback next year, right? Why would you make this trade? Do you think Antonio Brown is going to, you know, shut up and sit quietly while you decide to go 1-15 this year?
Yeah, and
it doesn't make sense.
That's why a lot of teams wasn't really kicking in the door to get him. He's a headache.
No, I didn't. I'm telling you, I you know, like he's one of those guys that you're like, man, I wish the Jets can get him, but because of the talent. But you know deep in the back of your mind that you don't want that guy going anywhere near Sam Darnold. You don't want him in his ear. You don't want the antics. You know what I mean? I wouldn't even. If I was a Jets, I wouldn't even trade for Odell Beckham. I wouldn't want him in my locker room around my young quarterback. I can't imagine. Can you? That's the one thing that, as much as crap as I give Eli, can you imagine if he was doing that in any other locker room? The fact that Eli is such a pushover is the only reason that plays here in New York, that kind of attitude.
The question that has to be asked, Mag Mike, though, is this, and this is what we just talked about this. If the Raiders are willing to give a big money, if they're willing to give big money to a receiver who turns 31 before next season, why don't they just give that money to Mac? And to me, in today's NFL, elite pass rushers are more valuable than elite receivers. Even receivers as good as Antonio Brown. And from a Steelers perspective, while they're getting rid of a headache, they also parting ways with their best skill position player for a not great price. Le'Veon Bell, and the Steelers are getting worse this offseason. And there's no way around that.
But you know, here's the argument, Lloyd, on that one. You know, I heard, what's his name? Larry Fitzgerald said Antonio Brown doesn't know how good he has it. And when you look at the list of quarterbacks Larry Fitzgerald's played with, you're like, man, you know, Arizona's been absolutely horrible outside of Kurt Warner. But I'll ask you this. It's something that people have to consider. Did Antonio Brown save Big Ben's career, or was it the other way around? Because Antonio Brown was a fourth-round pick out of Central Michigan. Florida. He's had to basically work. He's a self-made man. You know what I mean? He became the best wide receiver in football for a guy who probably should have been playing special teams his entire career. That's just a fact. Big Ben, on the other hand, was a first-round draft pick, and if you think about it, they've had to give him. He's got numerous top-rated players. What's going to happen to him now that he doesn't have a running back to dump the ball off 100 times? What's going to happen to him now that he doesn't have a 15-touchdown, 110-catch guy that he's had for the last 5-6 years?
Well, I mean,
that's what no one's talking about.
Yeah, but you know what, though? They do have Connor, and they do have Juju Smith. Now,
I'm sorry, Connor. Did Connor finish the season? One of the reasons they didn't make the playoffs, no one talks about it, because Connor missed the final month of the year, right?
Yeah.
Final four games of the year.
But I guess that's why
he proven he could stay healthy?
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's why they're willing to let both those guys walk. I'm not necessarily agreeing with letting them walk, but despite his Brown skill set, finding a trade partner wasn't easy throughout this whole process. But before he got dealt, you know, Brown indicated that he wanted a reworked contract with more guaranteed money, and he basically said that he could retire from football. And all of which were like hurdles in finding a suitable trade partner for both parties. And, you know, the reported trade between the Bills and Steelers on Thursday that fell apart because Brown didn't want to go to Buffalo. And when I saw that, I knew he wasn't going to want to go to Buffalo. Now, this trade won't become official until the new league year begins on Wednesday. But the saga appears to be over after 2 months of endless drama, rumors, and a false trade report. And it all began late in 2018 when Brown got into a heated dispute with Steelers quarterback Roethlisberger. And the dispute was serious enough that Brown didn't play in the team's season's final game against the Bengals. A game that held playoff implications, man, Mike. And immediately after that season ended, without a Steelers playoff appearance, despite, you know, a Week 17 win, Brown requested a trade. So let's see what happens. He seems happy in Oakland land.
But I mean, he got his money.
Yeah, but like you said, you know, Derek Carr, you don't know. We've seen flashes of Derek Carr looking great. And we've seen flashes of Derek Carr, like you said, looking like a deer in headlights. You really don't know what you're going to get. But he gets his wish. I guess, you know, in hindsight, when you look at it, the Steelers got what they can get for him. Let's see how it turns out for both teams. I do think, though, Mad Mike, that the Steelers obviously in a better position at this particular point in time than the Raiders are. Not that the Raiders have a bad team over there. I'm really surprised at how awful of a season they had. And that was following up a pretty decent season they had before Gruden took over. And Gruden's a great coach. So I'm surprised.
We'll have to see. You know, we don't know how much of the game is passing by. You know, a lot of people think that he's too old school. I don't think there's a such thing as being too old school as long as you can adapt. I think the people that get in trouble are the guys that forget all their old principles. It's the quarterback situation, but like I said, they're in a situation where, you know, maybe they don't have to wait till next year. And as crazy as it sounds, you know, they have 3 first-round draft picks. Maybe they take the quarterback this year in the first round, and then, you know what I mean? And then he just sits on the bench waiting for his turn. So if they do want to get out of the Derek Carr situation, that frees up more money down the road. You know, that's another consideration here. That no one has talked about. They can go in with the quarterback right now, and if they do decide to do that, they do have 2 other first round draft picks that they can use to fill holes. Devin Bush can be an option. You know, Greedy Williams might fall. It depends, right? So Byron Murphy, you know, just to name a few guys. It's just a matter for them of you know. It's not necessarily do or die for them. I think they can quickly. What I'm trying to say is, I think they can quickly become better than the Pittsburgh Steelers.
All right, so we'll see what happens. But look, listeners, we're going to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back from that break, we're going to talk about LeBron James as he passes Michael Jordan for the 4th highest score in NBA history. Does that mean that he's better than Michael Jordan? We'll touch up on that. We'll touch up on some baseball as well. And yes, we're going to talk some hockey. So we'll be right back with more of the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Welcome back to the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Talk Show. Listeners, before we went on our break, I was bringing up that LeBron James has passed Michael Jordan for 4th in career scoring in NBA history. And he moved in the 4th place Wednesday, this past Wednesday, as the Lakers superstar scored his 32,293rd point at that particular point in time on a layup in the second quarter against the Denver Nuggets. Now, this achievement was particularly special to James, who grew up in Ohio idolizing Jordan, and James tweeted his excitement before the game, and He only needed 13 points to reach that mark, and he now only trails Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, who has over 38,000 points, and Karl Malone, who has over 36,000 points, and Kobe Dean Bryant, who has over 33,000 points, Mad Mike. Now, the question I want to ask you, Mad Mike, there's two questions, listeners. Obviously, you always have this Michael Jordan, LeBron James comparison, all right? But before I ask Mad Mike that question, and you, the listeners, that question, the first thing I want to ask you, the listeners, and Mad Mike, is do you think that LeBron James surpasses Kareem Abdul-Jabbar and become the all-time leading scorer in the NBA? Do you think that happens, Mad Mike?
How far off is he? Do you recall the exact
LeBron
number?
LeBron James has 32,300 points, and Kareem Abdul-Jabbar finished his career with 38,387 points. So he needs about 6,000 points, so to speak, give or take.
Yeah, I do. Simply because I think LeBron James, I'm not going to call him a hanger-oner. I think he wants to play with his son, so he's going to keep himself in good enough shape to at least be impactful long enough to play with his son. So, yeah, I'd give LeBron another 4 or 5 years, maybe 3 more years at top production, which should give him enough time to... I mean, in a normal LeBron year, he's scoring 3,000 points a year, right?
Yeah, and season, he definitely passes Kobe Bryant and Karl Malone next year.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. So I think he'll be the number one. We know one thing about him. As much as he wants to deny it, he's entrenched in the stats. He wants to make sure he's at the top when he leaves, because to him, that cements his greatness. Personally, I think he sucks as a teammate, and I think that this year has kind of exposed him. So where people revel in these things, I kind of say, it's kind of followed him everywhere he went. If you think about it, outside of Miami, where, you know, he had big enough, you know, he had other superstar personalities big enough to keep him in check. So I don't know, man. I'm more interested in Brandon Ingram saying he doesn't like the toxic, you know, the atmosphere LeBron James brings to their franchise more than I am intrigued by this passing Jordan. He's not better than Jordan. Never will be. Simple. He doesn't lift people up, regardless of what they tell you.
And that's the argument. I don't necessarily think that he's even better than Kobe Bryant, Mad Mike. Maybe at some point, maybe when his career is over, I might feel that way. But right now, if I look at Kobe Bryant's career and him as a basketball player, and I look at LeBron James' accomplishment at this particular point in his career, I think he's close to surpassing Kobe Bryant. But in my mind right now, I can't even give him that much.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I'm not against that idea at all. Definitely not against that. That I wouldn't argue that. I think he's got to get that fifth championship, but I don't think he will. I mean, you got to think about it. This past weekend, you had two young Lakers decide that they rather, you know, Brandon Ingram opts for season-ending surgery. Same day, Lonzo Ball opts for season-ending surgery. So now, you know, they're saying, "Hey, you blamed us, the young kids, right?" So now we're saying, "Here, take your veterans and go show us how it's done. Go do it without us, since you blamed us for everything that's gone wrong."
Yeah, he's a phenomenal talent, but also throwing the fact, man, Mike, that Michael Jordan did go to college. He went to North Carolina.
Oh, no, that can't be lost on people.
Don't forget, listeners, he took a year off to play baseball.
Year? He took 2.5 years off. He didn't take a year. He took 2.5 years.
So also, throw that into the equation.
So, yeah, no, if Jordan didn't retire twice in the middle of his career, I don't think we'd be having this conversation. I don't. I mean, he's fourth on the all-time list with what? 5 years of total being out of basketball for a total of 5 years in between, you know, from start to total finish. Come on, man. You're telling me Michael Jordan couldn't have topped 40,000 all time points? 40,000 up, you know. I'm saying that. That's exactly what I'm saying, Lloyd. I think if he wouldn't have retired, he would have ended with more than 40,000 career points.
I agree with you on that. I agree. Look, the bottom line, in my opinion, is Michael Jordan's the best basketball player to ever lace him up. And there's been some great basketball players to step onto that court. Oscar Robertson, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, Wilt Chamberlain, Bill Russell. Some greats.
Think about who he beat. No one talks about that. Think about the Pistons teams he had to go through and the Boston teams he had to go through just to get to the finals, right? Then think about the Laker team with Worthy and Magic that he beat for his first title. Think about the Portland team he beat with Buck Williams and Clyde Drexler, the same Portland teams that you know, were in those do or die championships with Detroit. He beat Kevin Johnson and Danny Ainge and, you know, Charles Barkley for a title. You know, the 2 years that he had to go through Stockton and Malone. And then the one aberration you can say, oh, where everyone said they should have had it easy in Seattle. But people don't remember how good Sean Kemp and Gary Payton were, man. You remember how good? You tell me, when has LeBron faced any team of that those calibers?
Yeah, you're right. Probably the best team that I could say that LeBron James faced in the finals that they beat, Mad Mike, was maybe that OKC team. And Ray Allen hit that, you know, he hit that crazy three-point shot.
Against the Spurs. Yeah,
that was the Spurs. I forgot what team. That might have been the best team that they faced.
But, yeah, you know what I mean? But think about that. So, I'm telling you right now. So, Boston was their rival for a couple years, right? Chicago was their rival. I'll tell you that those two teams would have never even beat the Knicks of the 90s. And Jordan never even took the Knicks seriously. And those two teams would have never beat Pat Ewing's Knicks. That's just facts. And he made it look easy. I don't remember that. Do you remember us even going seven games with them?
We had no answer for that dude, man.
We always felt as New Yorkers, like, this is the year. This is the year. But go look back on all those series. Except for the one where we beat them when Mike finally retired. It was never a challenge. That Mike made it look easy. Think about it. When he beat Orlando. Think about the Penny and Shaq years. He's beat so many teams. He's beat so much talent that LeBron never... You don't realize how easy LeBron had it. You don't. When they had to battle, when he was with Miami and they were battling those Celtics teams, those Celtics teams were old already. When he had to battle those Chicago teams didn't have the kind of talent that Wade and Bosh brought. Like, think about that. Even you see it now in L.A. He gets to L.A. and he's like, I need Anthony Davis. I need this. Get me Paul George. When has he gone about it by saying, I'm the best player on the planet and I'm going to carry this team to a win? He didn't beat Golden State. The only year he beat Golden State, Kevin Love and Kyrie were healthy, right? Kyrie hit the game winner, not LeBron.
Yeah, he did. Yep.
But they don't tell you about that. They tell you about the block on Andre Iguodala. They never tell you about the three-pointer that Kyrie made. And then that's what gets lost in all of this. If Kyrie's not healthy and Kevin Love's not healthy, does LeBron win his championship in Cleveland? Probably not.
Yeah, listen, by no means are me and Mad Mike crapping on LeBron James.
I am. I am.
Talk about calling a spade a spade.
Nah.
I think that, you know, he's a hell of a basketball player.
He's not the greatest.
But
that's
what we're putting out to you guys. That he's not the greatest basketball player and he's not better than Michael Jordan. That's the lesson we're giving you at this particular point in time, listeners.
I'll ask you this. Could this Golden State team beat that 80s? Could they beat Dennis Rodman and Joe Dumars and Isaiah Thomas and Bill Laimbeer? Could they beat that team?
See, you know what? I was just talking about that with somebody about a week or so ago, Mad Mike, and I don't think that they can, only because of the style of basketball that was played back then. They were Broad Street bully, and they were good basketball. Detroit was a good basketball team, but they were physical.
Yeah.
The style of basketball that was played back then was so much different. Nobody, you know, you had play. Sometimes players cried about fouls, but it's ridiculous how players are crying about fouls nowadays, man, Mike.
No, you're right. I'm just saying on talent, because obviously there's metrics that people can use.
Well,
to,
you look
to
at talent, you would say that Golden State to
that era, right. And Detroit to this era.
I would Golden State has more talent than that Pistons team, but I don't think they, even with that being said, I don't think that they would beat them.
But do they have that talent? That Pistons team had legit four legit, you know. We talk about the big three and big four. They had a big three and big four. That team was for real.
They were, but when you talk about, you have Klay Thompson, this dude came back and dropped dimes. Well, not dimes, but trays. And you just, I just think that Golden State, when you talk about Steph Curry, Klay Thompson, Kevin Durant, I just think you have three players to me that, despite the Pistons having a world of talent, you have three players that any given moment, Matt Mike, can take over a game and just do completely.
With all due respect to that number, how many shots? Being honest, how many shots is Steph Curry realistically getting up on Isaiah Thomas?
No, but that's what I'm saying. But that's probably because the style of play would be a lot more physical.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, defensively, Isaiah can shoot the ball. Isaiah can score the basketball.
Yeah, but that's why I'm saying that I don't think they will beat the Detroit Pistons. I just think that they, at the end of the day, I think they're more talented scoring-wise, I should say. Because the only defender, really, that I would say Golden State has is Draymond Green. Andre Iguodala plays somewhat.
But,
you know, he's a solid defender.
I say this to you. There's no... Who's a better defender? Dennis Rodman,
I mean, top to bottom, they're not even touching Detroit defensively.
You wouldn't even know Draymond was on the court.
Yeah,
with the worm on him.
Them dudes,
he's not
going to
rebound the ball.
They would cry themselves off the court. The NBA players now, they're a bunch of crybabies.
So I'm just saying, even if you assimilate and you kind of try to mix up the errors, I think just on talent, I think that Detroit team can beat them. And the only reason I brought it up is because, think about, Michael Jordan went through hell and dethroned that team. And I'm telling you that team would have given, that Detroit Pistons team wouldn't have gone 8-1 in back-to-back finals against the Warriors. Facts. LeBron James did.
Listen, there's some people that think that this Golden State Warriors team, which I think is absolutely absurd, can be some of the USA Olympic basketball teams.
No.
Somebody posed a question to me, could they beat the Dream Team? Like, are you out of your damn mind? No way in the world this team is touching the Dream Team.
Nope.
And for you listeners, the Dream Team was a USA Olympic basketball team that had Michael Jordan, Patrick Ewing, David Robinson, Barkley.
Man.
No way in the world. No way.
Nope.
No way. I don't even know why I even entertained that argument with the person that I was going back and forth with, trying to get them to understand why it was impossible for them to beat them. But that's the day and age and difference, and he's a lot younger than I am. And that's the day and age, you know, it, as far as fans go, Mad Mike.
Yeah, no. That would never happen. You kidding me?
But, you know, if you're a sports fan and you do your previous history on those teams and stuff, no way. There's a bunch of other USA Olympic basketball teams that I don't think the Golden State Warriors team will beat outside of the Dream Team. Do they
beat could beat any team that Larry Brown coached.
Do they beat the team that has Stephon Marbury and them dudes on it? Yeah, they beat that team.
That's what I'm saying, the Larry Brown team. But outside of that, I don't.
Team that had, you know, when it was LeBron and Westbrook and all those, they don't even beat that team.
Yeah, no, it's Dream Team. That means the bench is stacked. That means, you know, you think about the Dream Team, man. Think about, you got Scottie Pippen coming off the bench on the Dream Team. Are you kidding me? Come on, man. You got Pat Ewing coming off the bench to play on the Dream Team. You got, like, let's stop it.
Magic Johnson.
Let's stop it. You got freaking Larry Bird coming off the bench.
Yeah, one of the, that's, folks, that was probably the greatest basketball team that you're ever, in the history of basketball, that ever stepped on the court.
Dude, you're talking about a starting five of John Stockton, Michael Jordan, Charles Barkley, Scottie Pippen, Karl Malone, and David Robinson. Think about that. Like you had Charles starting at small forward. Karl Malone at power and David Robinson.
Yeah, it was literally beating the snot out of teams.
Come on, man.
Oh, listen, man. It is what it is. But let's move on to some baseball, man, Mike. As our New York Yankees have named Masahiro Tanaka the opening day starter, as Luis Severino has shoulder inflammation. All right, so it marks the fourth time he's received, this is Masahiro Tanaka, that honor. And Tanaka started the first game of the season of each of the 3 years before 2018. Severino got the nod last season. And he'll be followed by James Paxton and J.A. Happ, who got lit up in his his most recent spring training start. Matt Mike's favorite pitcher in the Yankees rotation, J.A. Happ, that is, listeners. Get followed Tanaka in the rotation as Severino may miss the start of the regular season because of right shoulder inflammation. Are you worried about that at all, Matt Mike? Shoulder inflammation for Sevy?
Of course. And listen, Tommy Canley had shoulder inflammation last year in the spring. He missed the start, and he was never the same. For the entire year.
And this is just after they gave Severino a contract extension.
I heard a lot of people say that, but nothing ever showed prior. And he said really it was the first time he felt it was during warmups, and he told the team. Which is smart,
listen,
right?
I still
he didn't
think
go
it's
out
a
there
good deal either way.
It.
$10 million for Severino for 4 years. You know what I'm saying? $40 million at $10 million is not a bad deal at all.
No, but this is the thing about their winter. Their winter basically ensured you that you couldn't lose him. And there was no world where you could take the hit of him going down. And yeah, J Happ, you know, we can say whatever we want. At the end of the day, J Happ is what, 37 years old? You don't know when that cliff is coming. That cliff could be this year. You know what I mean? Think about that. That cliff could be this year. So, I know it was only a 2-year deal, but then CeCe, the same thing, man. CeCe, every year CeCe needs a trip or two to the DL for his knee. So what happens with him?
He's not even ready now. It sounds like the Yankees might, you know, have to run with Sessa and Loaisica.
Well, they're taking it slow with him. You know, he didn't exactly have the best offseason for staying in shape with the heart situation. But, I mean, that's another name that you just put out there, Sessa. Why do we still need to? Why are we still playing this game with him? What do we need to see from Sessa we haven't already seen? Sessa is—they call him a bulldog, but he nibbles. He doesn't have the stuff. He's not a good enough. He doesn't throw hard enough to be a reliable reliever in that pen. He walks too many guys. I don't understand. Every chance he gets lit up. But he's still an option to fill a spot from within. Come on, man. This is a guy that's been up and down the minors his entire career. You don't even know if he's a starter or a reliever. And you're telling me he's one of the internal options to replace Sevy in case this goes longer? Come on, man. Get out of here with that.
Man, Mike, before I just want to bring this up while it's on my brain, that Sonny Gray came out, and obviously you knew it was going to happen at some point.
You know what, Mike? Call me Mike the Prophet. Was I not telling you all last season that this is exactly what was going on?
You did call it. As
did
he blamed the Yankees
that this is what we were going
for his
on?
Woes. He said that the Yankees were making him throw a pitch that he really didn't want to incorporate into his repertoire.
No, it wasn't. It's not that. He doesn't throw that pitch for strikes. He likes to throw that ball in the dirt. And he says when you force him to throw it in the zone, it normally becomes a flat pitch. He likes to pitch on a lower plane with his slider. What that means, listeners, is he likes to start his slider waist level and have it dip down under the bat into the dirt. That's how he likes to throw it. The Yankees, on the other hand, did not want him utilizing the fastball. They wanted him throwing a slider for strikes. What he said is he didn't want to. He doesn't pitch like Masahiro Tanaka, and that's where Tanaka excels in, and that's where he struggles. And you got, as an organization, Lloyd, you got to see that. You don't trade for a guy, and then after trading for him, giving up real assets for him, you don't say, all right, we're going to change the way you pitch. Not only that, knowing that you have one of the worst blocking catchers of balls in the dirt behind the plate. Like, that's not the guy that they should have never targeted, Sonny Gray, if this was going to be their approach. I'm all with Sonny Gray on this one. 100% behind Sonny Gray. I don't think it's spilled milk. I don't think he's salty. I think he's salty with good reason. I don't think he's a spoiled brat by any means, like some people have insinuated.
He's gonna have a good season for the Cincinnati Reds. Watch what I tell you, listeners.
And not only that, by the way,
we'll be talking about this and be like, look, Matt Mike will be saying what I tell you about Sonny Gray.
But besides that, Lloyd, you know, and the only reason I bring up Tanaka is because, one, he's the opening day starter. Two, Sonny Gray mentioned Tanaka specifically. Tanaka is one of the league leaders in home runs given up over the last 2 years. So is this approach working for him? We're not talking about a pitcher with a sub-2, sub-3 ERA. We're talking about a guy that's been high threes and that's with a second half that was lights out. We're talking about a guy who's living in the high threes, low fours as a pitcher. So just because he's doing it doesn't mean that he's doing it well. Doesn't mean that they're succeeding with it.
Isn't Tanaka,
with this approach?
Tanaka was 12-6 with a 3.75 ERA. You know, he had a 1.13 whip in 27 starts last year. He did shine in the postseason, which he always does. You know, he threw 5 innings, a 3-hit, 1-run ball against the eventual world champion Boston Red Sox in a division series. You know, he's not fared well on opening day, listeners. Okay? He's not fared well. He allowed 4 earned runs in 4 innings in his first opening day start in 2015, 2 runs in 5 innings in 2016, and 7 runs in 2 innings in 2017. All right, obviously, if you're pitching on that day, given opportunity, you want to do your best. But he has a 9.49 career opening day ERA.
Yeah.
You go out and you sign J.A. Happ. You go out and you sign Paxton. And Paxton was supposed to be this
big. No, you don't sign him. You traded for him.
I'm sorry.
The only reason I bring it up is because you traded your best prospect for him.
Right. And if you trade your best prospect for Paxton, obviously, wouldn't you expect him to get the ball? Wouldn't he be the guy that you give the ball to? You traded away your best player. You didn't sign Patrick Corbin. You didn't sign Dallas Keuchel. You didn't sign anybody else. And you basically told your fans that we have what we feel is a very good pitcher. A very good pitcher. And you're not giving him the ball on opening day? You're giving it to a pitcher who hasn't had much success on opening day? Sometimes I scratch my head about Aaron Boone, man, Mike.
I don't think this was Aaron Boone's call. I don't. I think when it comes to Paxton, I think maybe they just want to kind of ease him in slowly. They don't want to put him on the back page so soon. CeCe's just not an opening day guy anymore. Like you said, Happ has struggled, and you know, Tanaka's their number two. So I guess you know, there's just the logic of when your one goes down, your two slides up. Everybody slides up. So. Paxton's not their number two just yet. You would hope that he becomes, with what they traded away, you hope that him and Severino become a 1-2 for a long time to come. But I don't know, man. I never felt like this pitching staff could afford to lose him. Their farm is not what it's been. Their farm, I think, I saw Baseball America rated them 17th. So, you know, they got a lot of heavy lifting to do. They got to start breaking guys back in, and they're not as deep as they once were. So, you know, they can't afford injuries right now. They can't.
I guess the one bright spot, listeners, that this is happening now, not towards the end of the season. And for good reason, you know, as Mad Mike was talking about Paxton, he'll start the second game in the rotation. All right, he's 30 years old. He's coming off of another solid, you know, performance, so to speak. He went 11-6 with a 3.76 ERA and two complete games and 28 starts. He struck out of 208 hitters in 160 innings, and he threw a no-hitter against the Toronto Blue Jays last May. And Hap resigned after going 7-0. He pitched well, listeners, when he put on those Yankee pinstripes. But were there better options than J.A. Happ? Yes, there was. Yes, there was. And let's face it, this team is going to be shorthanded in a rotation at the start of the season.
Right, right. But that's why, for me personally, I'm like, if I was going to give J.A. Happ $17 million over 3 years, I mean, I'm not saying I make the Paxton trade. I probably do make the Paxton trade. But then I say, hey, man, CeCe at 10 and this guy at 17 for 27, wouldn't I prefer to go after Corbin? Wouldn't Seve, Tanaka, Corbin, Paxton, and your fifth guy, Loaiza guy, I guess?
Sounds a lot better.
Yeah, that's the issue I have with the damn summer.
Man, Mike, they need to sign Dallas Keuchel before he comes off the market.
I'm not totally against that. But like I said, you know, and Joe said it here on the show, you know, they're reluctant. Aren't you a little reluctant to sign a pitcher who relies on contact? He's not striking guys out anymore. He's given up contact, and the Yankees have one of the worst fielding left sides of baseball right now. Right now, as they're saying they're going to be structured, it's Troy Tulowitzki and Miguel Andujar on the left side. Now, does that change if LeMahieu, Gold Glove type defense at second base and Torres at shortstop? Yeah, it does. But the Yankees haven't committed to that yet. And I don't think you can commit to giving Keuchel money when you're so bad defensively on the left side. Can you imagine?
Oh, boy.
Keuchel just doesn't miss righty bats anymore. And you're going to get a lot of...
That's why we tell you that it made all the sense in the world to sign Machado, listeners.
Correct.
That's why.
That's just what it is.
I don't give a damn what anybody says.
I don't think Tulowitzki is a bad defender, but he doesn't have the range anymore. His legs have, you know, all the injuries, think about it. His injuries have been to his feet, to his legs, to his bottom half. You know, a lot of fans that complained about Jeter's defense, think about that. That's what you're going to see when you're watching Troy Tulowitzki play, you know, defense this year. And Miguel Andujar is not Alex Rodriguez. Think about that for a second. How A-Rod, you know, at least defensively, his reflexes, his range, what he was able to snag, helped Jeter a lot. Miguel Andujar is not that guy. You know, we got to consider that too. So if Tulowitzki needs any kind of help defensively at third base, he's not going to get it from Andujar. So, no, I think this pitching staff's in trouble. You know, they're losing their strikeout pitcher. I mean, I don't know, man. I'm not feeling good. That's all I'll say. I'm not feeling good.
Oh, boy. So, I lost my train of thought, man, Mike. I was trying to think what I wanted to ask you.
Sorry.
And I know it's from listeners, you know, it's from all the concussions I done suffered from playing football. But it was a Yankee-related question. But either way, yeah, the Yankees, you know, they need to – look, they play the Orioles. I would like to think that they should beat the Orioles. But, I mean, like I said, I don't know if I'm, you know, I'm ecstatic about Tanaka starting the opening day. But, I mean, it is what it is. Mike brought up a great point that I didn't even think about. You know, God forbid Paxton goes out there and gets roped. His first start, he's going to be on the back page of every New York City paper. And they're going to attack him. And, you know, is that something you really want to do, you know, at the beginning of the season? At some point it may happen. You know, maybe it might have made sense to give the ball to J.A. Happ. But I mean, I guess at that point it would be kind of pick your poison, right, Mad Mike? Between Hap and Masahiro Tanaka. Oh yeah, now I know what I wanted to say to you, Mad Mike. Estevan Florial. You know, obviously Aaron Hicks is dealing with a lower back injury. And Boone is saying that Clint Frazier is probably gonna start in the minor leagues. He's like 3-for-22 or something like that. Does Florial make this big club?
No. It's, you got to think about something. If after missing a year, they feel like Clint Frazier needs some time in the minors to get his stuff back together, think about the fact that Florial missed almost all of last season, too, with a wrist injury. So, and he's only in double A. I don't think he is even a consideration, which is pretty disappointing to say. It's funny how one thing that we said about Hicks, dangerous to give him money because he can never stay healthy. And look at it already popping up in spring training.
Right. And that would, I mean, the Yankees haven't placed Florial in left field or right field.
He's a center fielder.
Yeah, he's only played center field. But, I mean, there's an indication that he definitely doesn't make the club unless they're saying that Hicks would be ready for opening day.
No, they got to believe Hicks is going to be ready. Maybe this helps out in getting Florial more at-bats. But, yeah, a guy that's never even played, seen Triple-A pitching yet, one, you're not going to start his clock because chances are he's not ready. And by promoting him straight out of spring training, you start his clock, you know, early. Because chances are he's going to get sent down to Triple-A. So chances are he would struggle in Triple-A this year as well, being that he's never even seen Triple-A pitching. So why start him in the big leagues? And then he's going to go down there. If he struggles there, then he's got to go down to Double-A. And all of a sudden, now you got a guy that's just mentally, you know, struggling and perception. You don't want to kill his value either. But, yeah, I don't know. I don't think he has a shot. But this is, once again, brings us back to Brian Cashman. So I don't think he's done a great job this winter. The depth is not there. It's Brett Gardner. You know, we know it, man. We said it. There's no reason to even, you know, harp on it, really.
All right, so listeners, we've been promising that we're going to talk hockey for a couple weeks now. So as promised, we're going to talk about some hockey. Now, obviously, Matt Mike's team, the New York Rangers, they're having not that great of a season, and rightfully so because their roster.
They're in the playoff picture. Wait a minute. They're in the playoff picture. they're not having an Islander type season, but for a team that's supposed to be rebuilding and thought that they'd be in contention for a top five draft pick, you know, they're only like 3 points out of the
final playoff spot. They are coming on strong, but it hasn't been a Ranger-like season, so to speak, is what I'm basically saying. You know, we're so used to seeing the Rangers where the Islanders are right now. And they somehow, you know, managed to play some solid hockey and put themselves, like Mad Mike said, in a position to, you know, to possibly sneak into the playoffs. But we're so used to the Rangers having that Islanders-type season, and now the Islanders are having a Rangers-type season. But let's face it, Mad Mike, they haven't been playing solid hockey. The Islanders I'm talking about. And I want to say, what the hell is going on with this team? Is it just that the Flyers, like the Flames before them, have the Islanders' number? Or is there something functionally wrong with this team? They barely beat the Senators this past week. But I would like to lean towards the latter, man, Mike, that something's wrong. They really need to figure this out before they lose, you know, home ice in the playoffs. In a good way, in my opinion, to begin to fix this will be an utter breakdown of a team chasing the Blue Jackets tomorrow night.
Well, I mean, you got to think about something, man, right? How many times has a team gone from worst to first in the NHL over the course of one season? You know, like you got to think about it. This team is going from worst to first or contending for it. And they lost their best player. And John Tavares, I'm telling you, man, this team is ahead of schedule. And the fact that you could even say those like the things you just said, and how they're actually going to give away home ice advantage in the playoffs in a year where everyone thought that they weren't even going to make the playoffs, let alone contend. That speaks to Lamoriello and Barry Trotz, the effect that they have in proven systems and knowing how to build winners. I think the Islanders are just fine, man. I really, really do. The only difference is now, I don't think that the Islanders are creeping up on anybody. Well, I think that's where things change.
I mean, they're close to the Capitals. But here's the thing, man, Mike, and I was talking about this with somebody. The Islanders are under the new coaching staff, they're a much better defensive hockey team. Okay, the defense has got much better, but the whole thing is they have to consistently score goals. And when you ask about who the best player on the Islanders is Matthew Barzal. Okay, and obviously, like you say, you lose your best player in John Tavares. You did, year in and year out, you knew you was going to get 30-plus goals from Tavares. You knew that. And Barzal's a young guy. So he's well on the cusp of possibly being that type of player. But the Islanders don't have that one player, Matt Mike, that could put the puck in the net.
No, but that's what I'm saying. You kind of anticipated that with Tavares walking out the door, right? But you got to think about something. Last year, they were the worst defensive team in hockey. They gave up
finish your thought. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, they gave up only almost 300 goals last year. They were the worst team. And this year, they're defensively, they're rated number one overall.
But listeners, what in the hell have me and Mad Mike been telling you about sports franchises in general when it comes to defense? He just said it for you. We've been saying this to you for the longest time. Defense wins.
Yeah, it reminds you of, and it's funny because you just remember you actually started this off by saying how strange that the Rangers and Islanders have kind of flipped I guess roles in the Eastern division, Atlantic division, whatever. But think about this for a second. Isn't that what John Tortorella used to preach? I know I don't have that 50 goal scorer, and Nash never became that. So we have to be one of the best defensive teams in hockey, and their style produced a Stanley Cup final. You know, they didn't win it, but it produced a Stanley Cup final. It wasn't until they got away from that style of play and they started looking to the more softer, quicker, more offensive-oriented styles of play that it started to fall apart. You know, and look at what Barry Trotz has said. I don't have the 50-goal guy, but what we can do, we can score enough to win, and we can really make this a special defense. And if we do that, then we'll be able to contend this is exactly what you see is what's going to happen.
Listen, can the Rangers pull a rabbit out their bottoms and make the playoffs? And can the Islanders keep pace with the Washington Capitals and keep home ice? It's going to be interesting to see, and we still have a lot to talk about. With that being said, that's going to bring us to a close of this week's show. We want to thank you as always. Me and Matt Mike want to thank you from the bottom of our hearts for sticking with us and keeping this thing going. Listeners, we're close to our 100th show, and it's going to be a special one. But we're embarking on that, and it's been a great run for us thus far, and we continue to keeping that thing going. We want to thank our producer, Ayo Omar Baker, for keeping this thing going as well. So listeners, please have a safe and blessed week, and me and Matt Mike will see you in 7 days. So, hey, yo, let's get up out of here, baby.
And just like that, that brings our show to a close. All of you fine, fine ladies and gentlemen that have been listening, I thank you. If you subscribe, thank you. If not, please do so. And make sure you share it with your friends and your family, anybody that you know. But get into some sports talk. You got the best sports podcast, in my very humble opinion. The best sports podcast, the real sports and the real talk, right here with the Lloyd A. Thompson and Mad Mike Sports Show. As you already know, episodes drop every single Monday. Head over to LloydAThompson.com. Follow on Instagram and Twitter at Lloyd A. Thompson. That's with two L's. Make sure you throw the second L in. And we'll catch y'all in a week. Peace.